Good morning. It is Thursday. This is the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We are live here in the Kia Studios. I sound out of breath. I tried to bend down to tie my shoe, and then I thought I was going to miss.
No diaphragmatic breathing while you're tying your shoe.
No. We're live in the Kia Studios. Mike, Bo, and Tiff. You're hanging out with
Put your hands up
pathetic.
Like this.
Pathetic.
Would you ever used to do that like in conditioning when you'd run? You'd hold your hands up?
No, they tell you you're supposed to lean over now.
No.
That's the science.
I don't believe it.
I don't. Coaches were all wrong. All of our coaches were wrong.
You know what? Hold on a second. We got to stop reinventing science. Okay, so you're telling me the way we did it. Look at how healthy we are. I mean,
I cannot confirm that.
And all of a sudden now, the science we live by for years is wrong.
No,
where we raise our hands when we run.
No, you always wanted to lean over after like a strenuous thing.
No.
Naturally, you'd want to lean over, but they would tell you no. Put your hands up or stand up straight.
But remember in endurance training in soccer, like did y'all ever run like the cross country tracks and stuff in high school when you were doing through conditioning for soccer?
College. Yeah, we did like 3 days trails, all that stuff.
Yeah, we did that in high school, and it was always like if you were getting out of breath, don't stop, just raise your hands above your head.
That. Not while you're running.
Not while you're running.
Oh, yeah, I did
what
that.
What kind of?
I cannot tell you. One of my welcome to college football moments at Bama was, they're like, hey, don't bend over while we're conditioning. Don't bend over. You're not allowed to lean over. And one morning, I'm just letting it dig, just puking because I was so exhausted. And I bent over just simply so I didn't puke on myself. And I got yelled at, and I'll never forget that day. They're like, stand up! I'm like,
ugh! That's disgusting.
I started like kind of like half leaning towards my shoulder, like, I don't know what to do! Help me! I'm puking!
You should have just threw up on somebody.
Well, I didn't want to be that guy, but man,
you
like,
are that guy, though. Go ahead and embrace it.
No, I don't think I'm a puker on people. That's all right, though.
Have you ever had another human being throw up on you?
A child? I mean, your kids, possibly. No.
Yeah, I mean, other than children.
Count.
Yeah.
Not an adult.
That might as well just be dirt for kids to do it. It just happens all the time. I don't know, man. I don't think so.
Thanks, appreciate that. Makes me feel like him.
I told you I puked on the carnival ride.
Yeah, I'm assuming
it fell on.
Yeah, you did puke on
people. Did you tell
that
story on air?
That was so good, dude.
Was it the Ring of Fire? Is that what it was?
It was a tall white thing that you were just up in the air. I don't know what it was called.
Did you go upside down at all?
No, you're just spinning. Right. Yeah,
I always love the Ring of Fire.
Oh, this way or like the looping starship? No,
not the looping, spinning like a twirl.
Oh,
like
those things are so fun. Kind
of not
thing.
Like a wheel spin, a twirl.
Yeah,
spin.
That's the thing that it raises up a little bit, but it doesn't go too far up because it's like an incline.
It's just, the whole video. I know we got to move on. The videos of the Ring of Fire though, where because it just goes in a circle. So if somebody pukes at the top, it usually lands on the same people when they get to the bottom.
Because of gravity.
It's just so bad. So bad.
Apologize for the gross talk this morning.
Yeah, hopefully nobody's into their breakfast just yet, but it's all good.
We're
rolling on
shortly, but this hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan. Injured? Hire Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. All right, the Falcons getting set for the Panthers this week, and Kirk Cousins was named the NFC Offensive Player of the Week. Of course, that comes off of his franchise record-setting performance with career bests in both completions at 42 and passing yards at 509. He completed 42 of 48 passes, so that is a 72.4% passer rating right there.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I think that's more passes and attempts and completions than Desmond had through like 8 weeks last year, but...
You went there.
Okay. Yeah, I did. I chose violence. You know what's funny is
at this point last year, you were still talking about him
being
the Super Bowl MVP, though.
Leave that man alone.
I know. I was still not off that train. We hadn't broke up yet. They've already had three NFC Player of the Weeks, two in defense and one in offense. They had only three last year, and it was week one, week seven, and week 12. This year it's 2, 4, and 5. Kind of a cool thing. But if you look at the last six player of the weeks for this Falcons team the last 2 years, three of them are one name.
Jesse Bates.
Yeah. It's pretty crazy, ain't it?
It is cool. And you know, one of the things that, and obviously, Dylan did a nice job printing this out so we could kind of read some of the stats that the Falcons are throwing out. This is the craziest part to me. He's the 13th player in NFL history to pass for 504 touchdowns. That's elite company. You're talking about like, The baseball equivalent of that is like throwing a perfect game. You know what I mean? Like, there's just not that many people in history that have been able to do that. 500 yards and four touchdowns.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd go perfect game, but yeah, it's a huge accomplishment. And the fact that so few people have done it, and I think what we've had two in the last 8 years in this franchise, which and it's been 8 years apart or nine seasons, I think it would be apart. It's kind of wild. I was reading Josh Kendall's article about Drake London. And you know, not to move away from Kirko and his big David.
It fits. They but kind Drake, of going to the same umbrella.
But yeah. Drake London had 154 of those, which was. Did y'all see that?
I did too. Just scared the tar out of me.
There's a ghost in here. None of us are near.
Yes.
Moved on its own. I thought somebody was opening the door because the creak.
The microphone. I'm sitting here talking, and it just violently goes in a different direction.
I don't know.
I don't mess with the spirits.
I think this might be the ghost of Desmond Ritter coming to get me.
Yeah, it might be. You're talking trash.
But he had 154 of those, which was I think yardage wasn't a career high, but the catches was. But dude, he's 12th in the NFL in receiving this year with 32 catches for 354 yards. Drake three touchdowns. Drake London is quietly having a pretty good year, like a breakout type season. He's got 44 targets with zero drops, and that doesn't mean the ball hasn't been knocked away, but he is not a drop that should have been a catch. You know that. So, and 34% of his catches have come from his slot. Those are all numbers. Josh Kendall in The Athletic. I didn't do that much research. I just read his article, but it's pretty wild that 34% of his catches have come from the slot, because I don't think people would. And look, I think it shows he can line up anywhere, Mike, but I don't think people would think that he would be getting that many targets and catches out of the slot.
No, I don't think so either. And I thought you brought up a good point a couple weeks ago when you said he's essentially playing like the tight end spot and not like lined up on, you know, the end of the offensive line, but you're right. He's kind of playing off tackle a little bit every now and then and kind of making those catches across the middle, contested catches. It's funny, man, because your perception changes so much after a game like last week. And, you know, we did like fair foul leading into the year, and I think there was a fair foul. It was like, you know, multiple guys on the team with 1,000 yards, whether it's a running back with 1,000 and a receiver with 1,000 or whatever. And we kind of went back and forth on that. And so I think after week one, I was kind of off that train of like these, you know, multiple receivers possibly doing things like that. But it's funny how you kind of throw for 500 and all of a sudden things start to line back up. Like it's like a correction. You know, that Kirk was able to get to last week. So it's just fun to see. I'm glad he got the player of the week, man. It's three of the first 5 weeks of the year, like we said, Falcons have been involved in the players of the week. So it's cool.
You can stay the conductor on that train of having guys Woo-hoo. Having a multitude of players piling up and racking up the yardage. Coach Raheem Morris, he said it's not just about Kirk Cousins. They've got to lean on a number of key players on offense.
You know, it's hard to just say Kirk. You know, you know, part of, you know, not playing as well as you possibly can play when you go somewhere is you put too much of that on you. And I think once you get to the point when you can lean on Drake, when you can lean on Kyle, when you can lean on Mooney, when you can lean on those up front guys like Chris Lindstrom, you can lean on those guys up front, Jake Matthews, that can really just help you in those tough crunch time situations to lean back and trust your training. I think those are the most important things. But Kirk, he's been outstanding. Like we talked about every single week, his ability to get better and better every single week has been, you know, exactly what you've wanted from a coaching standpoint.
I think there's a lot of fans and even some media members that would say, well, Darnell's the number one. Darnell's the number one receiver on this team. And I disagree, and the numbers disagree. I think that Drake is still your number one for Kirk, and I think he's taken that role even more in the last the first 5 weeks of the season, more into his hands. I think the issue is he's just so drastically different the way his targets and catches come from Darnell. That big plays seem to come from Darnell, so people want to levitate to him being the one. But in reality, I think Drake London is clear cut the number one receiver for this team.
I think he is, but here's the kickback I'll give you on that. I'm not so sure that Darnell's not the most important receiver we have, because of what he does to defenses and the speed that he brings and his kind of ability to stretch the coverage kind of allows Drake to do some different things in Drake's own game. So I agree with you. I think Drake's definitely one. I think that Darnell, though, his importance, it's almost like we talked about last year with the Hawks, man. It's clear that Trey is the guy. You know, and you're going back and forth, but the things that Jalen Johnson does for that team kind of makes them different, right?
Yeah, you need that balance. You need that yin to the yang, right? It's the difference in their and who they are as players is so, to your point, is so great that you've always needed both, and you didn't have Darnell in this offense. You have had no Darnell Mooney in this offense since Calvin Ridley left. And honestly, he's essentially been gone since 2020 because he only got a few games from him in 2021. So it is allowed to your point. It's allowed Drake to be that much more effective in the role of the receiver he is. But he's also changed. He showed much more in his game this year than people thought he had.
He really has. And when we come back, we're gonna get the latest on college football and some headlines for you. You know, the Dogs are gonna see Texas in just a few weeks here. What's the quarterback situation going on in Austin? We will discuss next on The Morning Shift. That's next on Sports Radio 99 The Game. Back here on The Morning Shift, I have something to say.
Uh-oh.
I have a fancy little, you know, the coffee maker at home, and I have nice coffee that goes into this coffee maker, but I'm out. But I have to say, and I'm not trashing the office coffee, what I'm about to say is the office coffee tastes better than my little fancy coffee at home. And is that because it's free? Is that why?
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to
you. Lordy, Lordy. Jeffrey's 40. Oh, no.
You guys are going to make me cry. I'm like, guys, why'd you thank you?
Well, you know. We weren't going to miss it
this
year.
Thank you, guys. It's very nice of you guys. Thank you.
You get the video for the social.
You're still videoing like mom.
I know that you'd respect the social work.
I would. You need to go vertical, though. It might make it better.
Oh. Yeah, I've been told you don't do it. You don't do videos like that. But
that's all right.
It's for the Twitter.
Okay. Thank you, Day-Day. Thank you, guys. Thank you.
Yep.
Tim! You thought we forgot.
I actually didn't want to. I was actually not going to talk about it.
What you were going to do is wait until like 8:58
no,
in the handoff.
No, I honestly
like, yeah,
wasn't.
These guys missed my birthday,
I swear. Steak. I was not. This is very, thank you guys. This is very nice of you guys.
Happy birthday.
That is
40
quite
long
lovely.
Years ago, Tiffany Big Time Blackman was born on this day.
Yeah.
You're giving us a soliloquy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm going to take your moment and give a speech.
I was actually genuinely surprised. Thank you. Surprised.
Good.
Thank you, guys.
Good. Do you feel older today? Does it say 46 the way I requested, or is it just say?
Let me look.
Okay. No, it didn't say 40.
No, it just says 40.
Yeah.
So,
we're going to go with 39 if that's okay.
I'm all right owning it.
Yeah.
I'm cool with age.
Nice.
That's fine.
Nice.
Still feel good.
Age is but a number, Tiffany.
I don't think I'm going to be that friendly when I'm like, you know what I mean? Like, I feel I don't like, I'm getting to the point where I don't like birthdays. So, good for you, man. I love that.
Thanks. I mean, you have every, well, never mind. That's going to sound like a Debbie Downer. So, never mind. But
every birthday is one step closer.
Every birthday.
Yeah. Wow.
No, I wasn't going to say that. I was not going to say that.
A bundle of joy.
No, but thank you. Thank you, guys. I know I've been a curmudgeon just because I run on fumes week to week. So I appreciate you guys still being nice to me, even though I've been not as nice.
We all, in this business, we all run on fumes, some more than others, some less than others. And you burn the candle at both ends with your travel and your work, but we're happy to be a teammate with you and a friend. And
I appreciate it.
There's your soliloquy.
I'm not gonna.
I can't top
shed a tear this morning, but dang it, you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're good. We know. We got you.
Yeah, that's all right.
Dang it, I appreciate it.
Of course. Share.
Maybe it's hormones because I'm 40. I'm good.
Shove some cake with that fancy, non-fancy, good tasting coffee, and you'll have a hell of a breakfast.
No, the coffee's good. That's what I said.
I said the non-fancy, good tasting coffee.
I don't even know what to do. Thank you guys. I have a cake. I have a mini balloon with, it looks like there's chocolates in there.
Yeah, yes.
It looks like I'm going to need to go to the dentist.
The best part is it says best wishes on it. read the.
Oh, am I getting fired? Am I getting fired too?
Turn it around. Best wishes.
I got bad news. I messed the video.
Don't let the door hit you on the way out.
See well, we knew that.
Good luck.
That the best wishes thing has you written all over it. You're like, oh, it'll do. Best wishes, whatever.
I love it.
I will say I'm on a flight to Reno today. Not how I envisioned for my game, but I will say if anyone from Delta's listening, you know,
upgrade you.
If you guys want to, you know,
let me upgrade.
I did try to flex, you know, on everybody with this thing called a regional upgrade and bypass the upgrade line.
Oh man,
I'm hoping that it kicks in. But if you happen to be the gate agent,
pull some strings. If Ed Bastian is listening, if Ed Bastian is listening,
you want to make me a 360.
You know
member.
What though? I will say this.
So you know, that's the only thing. I'm...
If Ed Bastian is listening, here's what I'll say: that should be a part of what Delta does. If somebody is flying solo on their birthday, they should get an automatic upgrade.
I am here
for that. I think that should be a locked-in rule from now on.
If you're flying at all, you should get an upgrade. Of course, that'd probably be a lot of upgrades. You never know how many people have the same birthday.
Well, it depends. If there's eight people flying to Cancun for somebody's birthday, you know, on their birthday, you can't upgrade everybody.
Yeah, just upgrade,
deserves to get vaulted towards
me.
Well, at least a free drink.
I was going to have to go to the gate anyway to check to see if the regional upgrade thing kicked in. So my hope would have been, like, they'll look at your license, they look at whatever, and they're like, it's your birthday. And then you'd just, you know, give you the upgrade. But I don't know if that's going to work in my favor today. Yeah. But I'm hopeful. So if you're listening,
where are you landing at?
Reno, Nevada, which okay, I was so told is
this would be info that the gate agent would need. You
they know would
what
need.
Mean?
They would need.
Yeah,
this.
They would
I
need.
I was told it is the Atlantic City of Nevada.
Oh, is that what it is?
What does that even mean?
I don't know, but it's so.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll, I don't know. Anyway,
it's the Daytona of Florida's East Coast, is what you're saying. Oh, man.
It's Daytona.
I appreciate you guys.
Anyhow,
thank you.
Happy birthday.
Bo, Mike, Dylan, Day-Day, thank you guys so much. I appreciate it.
Yep.
Okay, your check on some MLB and the playoffs. I can't even talk anymore right now because I'm thrown off, but I know how much Bo wants to talk about the Mets and Phillies games and how you're rooting for the Mets.
Well,
they did beat the Phillies.
I was.
Game 4-2-1.
I was rooting for the Mets.
So you just changed your mind now?
No.
Okay.
They have finished off.
I was going to say, it's not an
Phillies.
Active thing. Things have changed now.
Yes, now that they have eliminated the Phillies, the Mets are public enemy number one. I just want that to be very well stated. However, it was kind of bittersweet to see them do to the Phillies what the Phillies have done to the Braves the last 2 years. Braves win the division. Phillies get hot in the wild card. They beat them. Last year's NLDS went...
Hey, bittersweet? I thought you hated...
I hate
the Phillies.
I do.
It's bittersweet because
it
happened to the
Braves. I have to see the Mets do it.
Okay.
That's a good point.
But the reality is the Phillies beat us the exact way the Mets beat them in the NLDS. Game one, beat us. Game two, miraculous comeback. You think, you know what, they got it. They've turned it on. Everything's going to be okay. Game three was a domination by the Mets. And then game four last night, the Phillies had it. I mean, they were up 1-0 into the sixth inning, and they pull out. I can't remember who. I think I cannot think of the guy's name that was pitching for the Phillies. But they bring in Estevez, and Estevez can hit 100 easily. And my favorite part is he comes inside on Lindor, and with 100 miles an hour, and the umpire even steps out and kind of looks at Lindor and was like, "You're good." And Lindor just kind of leans back and goes, yeah.
Gives
and
a little shoulder stretch.
Yeah, and the next pitch, he hammers
Tater
to right center.
Yeah, he did.
And that was it. And the Mets win. And so I just really enjoyed all the Phillies fans and their arrogance and some of their hosts up there and all of that just kind of getting the egg on the face because they all thought they were going to turn it on. Now, they're all going to play the game today to say that the Phillies didn't play their best down the stretch. Not necessarily wrong. But they're going to play it wasn't the rest. It is the rest. And Major League Baseball has to figure out how to keep these players that have these 4 to 5 day layoffs in a routine because it affects baseball more than any other sport.
I disagree with your assertion that they're going to try to say it wasn't about the rest. I think most Phillies fans are going to say it was about the rest, and I think they deserve it because they weren't saying that last year when the Atlanta Braves had to deal with the same thing. Oh, it's about the rest. Well, good, because we dealt with it down here. All right, and so maybe it's time for you to kind of swallow your pride a little bit and admit that that might have had something to do with the win you had last year. That's how I feel about that, man. But no, and here's the thing, Tiff. I'm watching this game last night, And Kyle Schwarber's up to the plate. He's the last batter up. Edwin Diaz is on. He's throwing 100-101. And there was still part of me, with two runners on and Schwarber up to bat, that thought this is going to be a Philly moment where Schwarber hits a 500-foot tater off a 101-mile-an-hour fastball, and this is just going to be the next chapter. And the Phillies are going to be, you know, coordinated and everything else. And so it was not, I mean, literally Diaz hits 101 on the outside black and just sits Schwarber down. And I thought it was awesome. Edwin Diaz just had so much emotion on his face. I mean, and obviously all the Mets players did. But Edwin Diaz didn't even, like, celebrate in the dog pile. He just kind of stood back, and he's just screaming expletives. And they're showing him on the camera, and he's just, ah! You know, just screaming. He's just screaming at the stands, and everybody's like dogpiling behind him. And he just kind of hugs the catcher, untucks his shirt, wait till the dog pile calms down, and then just starts walking out towards the dog pile. And I was like, "What a G!" Like that guy. You imagine being as good as you are as Edwin Diaz, and just being like, "Don't need to celebrate unfinished business. Time to move on to the CS." Baby.
I just think people celebrate differently. I think screaming and cussing is how he celebrates, and I can relate. So
you think you'd do that too? You'd be square in the middle of the dog pile. You'd be the guy leaping on top, trying to treat the dog pile as a table.
I think I'd be more like going around giving the fans the DX suck it.
Oh my god! Okay.
You just hit a next level
here.
That
was in the house. Yeah. From,
I'd be, the commissioner would have words with me.
Look, after the other game going on NLDS, it was game four. The series is tied between the Dodgers and the Padres, which the Dodgers, obviously the offense was there because they put up 8 runs. But they had a historic effort by their bullpen, and so it was a shutout.
Yeah, and
seven fellow series, relievers, man, in the bullpen game.
Yeah, pretty good feat. Padres at bats have been red hot this entire playoffs.
For eight total
run so far. Dylan Cease started on short rest, did not work out well. So now it goes back to LA, and we could get a New York LA and LCS, which would be huge for the MLB TV offices.
And real quickly, the Tigers and Guardians. Tigers take it 3-0. That was game three, so they lead that series 2-1. And then with the Yankees and Royals, New York wins 3-2.
But more importantly,
the ALDS game three, and that series is tied 2-1. Thank you guys again. I appreciate the birthday wishes.
And Tiff's time out. She's going to be stuffing her face with birthday cake.
Yeah. We'll be right back. This hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan. Injured, hire Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. College football headlines for you that we had breaking news earlier. This guy surprised my birthday, so we push college football to this segment now. And with Georgia, they're going to see Texas in 2 weeks, and we're talking about who might be the quarterback. And right now, Coach Steve Sarkisian, he announced on Monday that Quinn Ewers it returned to practice during their bye week. So he feels good about his availability for Saturday's Red River Rivalry Showdown against Oklahoma. So if you recall, Ewers injured his oblique back on September 14th. And then it has been Arch Manning who has stepped in and done a nice job.
Yeah, he's done good. He's not been Quinn Ewers, though. And I think that is the thing that fans need to, and everyone needs to understand. Arch Manning did everything that was asked of him, and there's no more he could have honestly done, really, other than just be perfect. But Quinn Ewers is the better quarterback right now. He was never going to lose his job. The only thing that Arch Manning has done has better at than Quinn Ewers is the family name. He's got a better family name. That's it.
I don't know if that's fair, dude.
Quinn Ewers has been
So what you're doing right now is you're knocking him because of his name.
I'm not knocking
and he
him.
He hasn't used that as a crutch at all.
No, he hasn't, but it has been the hype machine for him.
It's not his fault.
It's not his fault. Again, this isn't about Quinn Ewers and Arch Manning. It's about people that the hype train thinking that somehow two average games from Arch Manning was going to surpass all of the things that Quinn Ewers has done.
Average.
They weren't average games. And I probably undersold it by saying he did nice job.
Who are the
I know what you're going to say about opponents, but let's just look at a kid that hadn't played in a college game before coming in, doing what he did.
Don't forget, they were up 7-6 over Miss State with about 2 minutes to go in the first half. He makes a dime of a throw. But it wasn't like they were rolling through teams with Arch back there like they were Quinn.
No, but I'm saying, like, I think people are getting excited about the ceiling for this guy. Or maybe the fact that there probably is no ceiling for him, right? Because you're coming in, having not played before, and still able to do that and lead a Texas team to a win, I think is still a big deal. And then you start to, your mind starts to probably wonder, okay, what else is in store? What else does this kid have in store for us? So that's probably where a lot of the excitement is coming.
I've talked to a couple of different Bama fans that are like, man, it's like kind of like Tua and Jalen. And I'm like, no, it's not even the same, because I think they're both more equal in terms of talent. And
I think they're the same quarterback, too. I think Jalen and Tua are different players.
I kind of disagree with that, too. When you look at Arch Manning, he's way more of a threat with his legs. Now, they're both, you know, similar in terms of their style, but we saw Arch Manning in the speed he displayed. I think he can do a little bit different things than you would see from a Quinn Ewers.
I think Quinn
aspect.
Can do more with his legs than people give him credit for. I think his problem is he just can't stay healthy.
He doesn't. So I don't think this is as simple as you're thinking it is.
I don't think there was ever any doubt that Quinn Ewers is a starting quarterback for Texas.
I think Quinn Ewers is a possible first-round pick. I had Quinn Ewers as my Heisman finalist going into the season. I think he's great. I think there's probably more upside, though, when you look at what Arch Manning can do in Steve Sarkisian's offense. So I agree with you. I'm not saying they're wrong for starting Quinn Ewers. I just think it's way, way tougher decision than you're kind of alluding to.
I think the fact that anyone thinks in their right mind that in two games, again, against subpar opponents where Arch was, I think, I said average. Maybe that's unfair. Maybe he was good. You want to say good? But he didn't do anything that makes me think, yeah, I'm gonna go ahead and replace Quinn Ewers, who led us to the college football playoff last year, and I was already has a good win and went to Michigan and played very well. Quinn Ewers is and will be the starting quarterback for this team moving forward, unless injury, rises up again.
I agree with you. I just don't think it's that easy, man.
I think it's very easy.
I think that if you get 2 weeks down the road and you get shellacked by Georgia, if that were to happen, then I think these questions are going to rise back up.
Well, if they get shellacked by Georgia, a different Georgia is going to come to Austin.
Well, you seem adamant about that. I think Texas
is the best team in the country.
Okay.
I don't think anyone's – I think they're the only team that's shown that they're the best team in the country consistently through 5 weeks.
You just said that they just – basically, the Arch Manning just beat two nobodies the last couple of weeks. So what are we hanging our hat on?
What do you mean? They have beat two nobodies. Miss State is not very good.
But they also went
to Michigan and dominated Michigan.
And you're saying that's one of the best.
I think they have looked consistently better than anyone else. Alabama has struggled at times. Georgia has lost and struggled at times.
I'm going to ask you to lower your volume just a little bit. I don't know why you're yelling at me.
Because I don't like your tone. Well, and I don't like your question.
You sound
I know you're being argumentative right now.
No, I just think that you're so confident in your answer that doesn't make sense to me, and I don't know why you're that confident. It just is not that simple.
All right, who is shown?
Texas is going to beat Georgia. It's the simple Quinn Ewers is the guy. They're winning the natty with Quinn.
No, like, that's not what, man, I said, but
it's
I
not
said
as far
that
as
if,
we're going here.
No, you made the statement, if Georgia come in and shellacks Texas, which Georgia that you've seen so far is showing up to do that? Tell me the Georgia you've seen this year that will show up and shellack Texas
second half against Bama
in Austin. No.
Second half against Bama.
No, they wouldn't.
So Georgia this week has Mississippi State.
Go Bulldogs.
In their matchup.
Wait, which one? Is this,
so UGA clearly bounced back in a pretty dominant way. What was it? Against Auburn. And I missed that score.
Well, 31-13.
Thank you very much.
I just had the
makings of some sort of trap-ish game ahead of a game against Texas. Or I know people are probably already asking them the questions. Are you guys looking ahead?
I don't think that, and I think Georgia fans would tell you, I don't think that game was as dominant as they wanted it to be against Auburn. And that was a lesser opponent, and Auburn really wasn't doing a lot of things. But that game was with, you know, I mean, at the start of the fourth quarter, that game was a 10-point, 11-point game.
I think Auburn's a lot better on defense than people will give them credit for.
They definitely looked that way last week until the very end. I got out of hand.
I think they're a quarterback away from being a better team than they show. Let me say something.
Hugh Freeze away.
Yeah, that's not that. I don't disagree with you at all.
I'm right.
Can I say something though? Miss State is not Vanderbilt. All right, they are not. Miss State is probably the worst team in the conference.
It ain't no question.
And that's why I was a little bit hard on Texas's performance with Arch last week, where I know they won handily, but to be 14-6 at halftime at home, against Miss State. I that's rough for me because I saw Florida run through Miss State. All right, they're the worst defense.
But all I'm saying is
in college football,
a player that had not played, right? That took over in a game.
I just think it's obtuse for fans and media, not you two, but other fans and media, to clamor for him to take over. To just come in and play average and say, oh, he should be the starter of Quinn Ewers. It's disrespectful to everything Quinn Ewers has done and everything Steve Sarkisian is doing because you're telling that man that he doesn't know his program. You know his program better than him.
Well,
and I'm not saying y'all said that. I'm saying heard that.
Here's the thing. I think it's a little bit disrespectful for you to bring up his last name and just dismiss the quarterback because of his last name.
It's a little bit dismissive. There's no dismissal, but I'm telling you, if Arch Manning's name was Arch Johnson or Arch Morgan, no one would give a damn about him taking over the job. You'd all be saying, here comes Quinn Ewers back in to take over because they need him.
That's not true.
It is absolutely true.
That there is some. I'm not taking away from his talents because of his last name. He's clearly talented and clearly deserving of being a starting quarterback somewhere. But I do slightly agree with Bo in the sense that the more media, the more the fans clamoring for him to start does have a part of it has to do with
Quinn Ewers
who he is
the guy.
You're absolutely right, Tiffany.
It's not that
he's dismissing.
It is not that, but I also agree with you. It's not that clear cut based on the talent of both the quarterbacks. Yeah. When we come back, NFL talk. Falcons, Panthers this week. What does Atlanta need to do to get that pass rush and their defense to keep improving? We'll hear from Coach Raheem Morris next on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We are in our 7 o'clock hour. It is brought to you by Zero Res, smart, lasting, clean. We did talk about how Kirk Cousins won the NFC Offensive Player of the Week. But guys, beyond that, he won a very much more prestigious award.
Uh-oh.
And that was the Nickelodeon MVP.
I saw that.
He was surrounded by his offensive linemen
up in
Flowery Branch. He walks out. Jake Matthews presented him with some sort of a award, a trophy, and he was slimed.
I love that.
So I thought it was great. I'm sure his kids probably thought he was the coolest.
That's the key. Yeah.
And actually, I've been slimed before.
Have you?
I have.
How?
Universal
when?
Studios. I got selected as a child. Yeah.
No.
About 30 some years ago?
No, I was 30. Yes. I guess I don't know, maybe like 8 to 12 range, somewhere in there.
Wow. Okay. It's a long time ago.
I can't imagine 12-year-old you was like, I want to get slimed.
No, I did. What are you talking? This is what people are layered, okay?
I'm just saying, we're going to knock that back to 8. 12-year-olds that I've been around. Not you per se, but just 12-year-olds I've been around are just they start to develop a little bit of an attitude.
32
you know I mean?
Long years ago.
You know, I'm just a little bit different. Yes, today is my
birthday.
She's
always had an
attitude,
dude. You
want to keep reminding people, I am 40 today. Thank you very much, Bo.
40 and rocking it.
I just want to make sure everyone knows it's your birthday.
You're like 32 long years ago.
Yeah.
I will say.
You're in your prime, Tiff. It's all right.
Not to change subject, but while it's on my mind, I saw, did you guys see the Andy Dalton presser where he was asked about Kirk Cousins' relationship? And it kind of has been lost in the weeds that these guys kind of are the same age. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They've been around the same amount of time. And Andy Dalton kind of highlighted the fact that they actually were roommates at like an Elite 11 camp when they were coming out. Coming out of high school. Yeah, that long ago. And he was kind of asked, like, hey, how was Kirk Cousins as a roommate? And he was like, exactly like you'd expect, like really clean, nothing left on the floor, like just as much as you would expect Kirk Cousins. And he said that he was kind of the same way. But it has not hit me yet because of all the talk around Andy Dalton and Bryce Young that these guys are essentially the same age. I mean, you know, they've been around a while.
Think about that.
I was thinking about this the other day, not Andy Dalton and Kirk Cousins being roommates, but when Kirk Cousins was drafted. And if you remember, it was the RG3 draft. They traded all the draft picks away for RG3. And then Mike Shanahan, to the disbelief of every analyst, every draft guru, every media person that talks about the NFL, like, why would you draft a guy in the fourth round? He's never going to play. He's going to sit. He's not even the same style of quarterback that RG3 is. And, you know, then later you find out that the owner wanted RG3. The coach wanted Kirk Cousins. And you look at the career path, you look at where Kirk Cousins is, it's just crazy. Like, and now he's still playing at a high level. And Andy Dalton, if I'm not mistaken, was a first-round pick for the Bengals, maybe a second-round pick.
I think he was first.
He was second for the Bengals in 11. And he's on, like, his eighth team. And not that he didn't play well for an extended amount of time.
Forever, yeah.
But he's bounced around teams, come in for a number one pick, and they're talking about playing each other. It just shows you how you never freaking know.
I've told you guys this story before, but it's kind of worth mentioning right now with the Andy Dalton talk. There, you know, when we beat Ford in the SEC title in 2009, December 2009.
Yeah.
Right, we leave. This is before, you know, you could just stream every single thing and watch TV on airplanes. So this is, you know, 15 years ago. So we're in the air and we're landing, and like I think I maybe just got my first iPhone, and Nebraska. It's showing on like the updates on our phones that Nebraska and Ndamukong Suh had just beat Texas, and Texas was number two or number three at the time. So they would have vaulted into the national title game against us, and that's when Colt McCoy throws it out of bounds, and they end up putting 1 second back on the clock. So for like 10 minutes. As we're sitting on the airplane on the tarmac in Tuscaloosa, ready to go celebrate our SEC championship win, we think we're playing Andy Dalton and TCU in the national title game. Like, we're all talking about Andy Dalton, Jerry Hughes, how good that
team
was.
It was
a really good team. And so you think back on it, and you're like, man, that was crazy. Like, for like 10 minutes, we were like, man, we're facing off with TCU. And it was not like a Power 5 program. Like, that was before they got involved and got a chance to go to the Big 12 and everything. So that was really crazy, and I thought a lot back then of Andy Dalton, and I think a lot of him still now, man.
Well,
in his career path.
If you're a Falcons fan, Tiffany, you better remember that he's a smart guy, he's a veteran, and if we play the defense we've played in the past with playing off, he'll take those 5-6 yard passes all day long and try to move the chains.
And they've got to try to maximize on any opportunity they get to get to him. Here's Coach Raheem Morris on the pass rush and the defense improving with our Dukes and Bell.
As far as the pass rush, that's something that we have to improve. But at the same time, we can help ourselves improve with that on offense as well. Let's play with some leads. Let's see what our pass rush is really about. Right now, we got far and few between with the pass rush. But when we do get the opportunity, it just hadn't been good enough. And that's something that we got to bring to the light and we got to bring to the forefront for our guys. And like I think that's well known and documented through us. But I think as a team, it's going to be something that we got to be able to do better too as a pass rush.
Well, he's right. Playing with the lead drastically helps your pass rush. I think the Vikings lead the league in pass rush and aggressiveness as far as sending guys. And they've played with the lead all but maybe 5 minutes of the season. However,
the
New York Giants are pretty freaking good at getting after the quarterback right now. And they have two guys, if you believe that Kayvon Thibodeau is becoming that guy. But with Brian Burns up there now,
yeah.
And they have the defensive line's pretty good, Mike. They've been pretty good, too. And I don't think they've played with the lead that much this season. You know, they've probably played with more than the Falcons, but the Falcons have had to come back a lot, which has hurt them in the pass rush game at times, but it's not a full-fledged excuse.
Yeah, it's not, and I think that this you know, everything is kind of cyclical when you talk about stats, and at the end of the year, you kind of are what the stats say you are, and I think this could be one of those corrective games. People wondered last week, you know, with the injuries that Tampa Bay had in the offensive line, could you get back right? And you and I sat on this show, Bo, and talked about it until we were blue in the face that we were not going to be able to pressure the quarterback last week. And if we did start to pressure the quarterback, they were going to speed up everything they did offensively, and they were going to get the ball out. They were not going to – Liam Cohen in Tampa will not allow you to do that. I think it's a little bit different. When you look at Andy Dalton, I don't think he's as mobile as Baker Mayfield. They are now dealing with injuries up front. Tiffany talked about it yesterday with Taylor Moton being one of those guys that's down. Obviously, you know, the center leaves with a biceps injury, and he's out for the year, so – what a lot of people thought that you would get pass rush-wise against Tampa last week, I'm not so sure that this week isn't kind of the get-right game in the statistical category of affecting the quarterback.
They have ran the ball well against us the last few years. I think they're going to try to do that again. Now, Chuba Hubbard is coming off a good game. I'm a big Chuba Hubbard guy. I think they're going to try to run the ball down our throats, and they have done it well the last few years.
Yeah, Chuba Hubbard, I'm glad you brought him up because they're having to kind of game plan on how to contain that guy. And Coach Raheem Morris was talking about that during his press conference. But obviously, Chuba Hubbard's going to present a significant challenge for this team.
Chuba Hubbard is tough to deal with. You know, he's running the ball really well. He's been a productive player. I think he went to Iowa State, even from since his days at Iowa State, I believe. And it's no different. He's a hard runner. He's a very skillful runner, particularly inside the tackles. He's broken a couple long runs this year. That's done really well, and like, I think it's no different in game planning for him than it is to just stop the universal up front with their O line targeting things the right way, doing it the right way. We got to be in our fits and make our hit. We got to be in our gaps and make our hits. And like, if you're not, he'll certainly exploit that.
I think it. I think it's easy to blame the defensive line, Mike, but I think you also have to look at the linebacker play and being able to shed and stack these and get off these blocks. And I think I don't know if Nate Landman's coming back now. I know the window's open. He's out there. Yep. I think he was limited yesterday in participation, if I'm not mistaken. I got to double-check that. That is so key to me. I think Nate Landman could be the key to getting this run defense kind of back under wraps somewhat, because it's been pretty bad so far.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And, you and I talked about coming into the season that, you know, everybody talks about pass rush at these exterior positions and, hey, you know, we need to get better pass rushers. Well, what you did was you lost in Ryan Nielsen's defense two of your best run defenders that kind of set the edge a year ago, right, when you talk about the two defensive linemen that are no longer here. And so I think it's kind of important to kind of keep that in mind. I'm with you a little bit. I think the linebacker play on inside runs has to be a little bit better. I think they, you know, we're kind of built a little bit, Troy Anderson-wise, as far as speed and being rangy. But I don't think there's any doubt about it. In my opinion, the one position group on this team that has to absolutely step up over the next few weeks is the defensive line. And we talked about the depth going into the year about what you're getting for the defensive line and, you know, how do you let go, you know, Kentavious Street, and you're going to keep nine guys for three positions and you drafted there. And you see Rook playing last week has a little bit of a positive upside, a positive game in terms of his first game action. So that to me is definitely a position group. And the fact that they activated Rook lets me know that Raheem understands that as well.
And I thought Onyemata played one of his better games on Thursday night. You know, I need more from Zach Harrison. Zach Harrison came on the last four or five games last year. Haven't seen that Zach Harrison yet this year.
I think he came on as far as pass rush, but I'm not so sure that I think he's played better in the run than people realize. It's just that he's just not a massive part of that rotation right now.
I do want to go back to Nate Landman, what you were talking about, Bo. He was designated to return from injury reserve on Monday and then returned to practice. So you were correct, in a limited fashion on Wednesday, just to answer your question there.
Oh, I got it right. So, I remembered what I read. I just think Nate Landman is so good in the run game, and he's different than Troy in some ways. But I just think having this full capacity of linebackers back. Remember, we've only had the full linebacker look once this year, and that was the opening week against Pittsburgh. And I think Landman was banged up in that game coming into it.
And then what Anderson listed as a non-participant on the team's Wednesday injury report. So they're going to monitor, this is from AtlantaFalcons.com, the status of both linebackers as they go into the rest of this week to get set for the Carolina Panthers. When we come back here on the morning shift, let's get you the latest headlines going around the NFL when we go in the huddle. We'll be back on the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We are back and going in the huddle here on the morning shift. The Saints and Falcons, of course, will meet again this season. And it's quite possible that Spencer Rattler will still be the starting quarterback for them, because he will start against the Buccaneers in the Saints game this weekend. That is because Derek Carr is dealing with a strained oblique that he suffered in their previous game against the Chiefs. So he is week to week, but Spencer Rattler is the starting quarterback this weekend.
And I want to get to Spencer Rattler stuff, too. I do want to give a shout-out, though, to the Saints and their organization for taking care of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers that are, you know, obviously they know a lot about, you know, kind of hurricanes. Running away from hurricanes. Tampa's been in New Orleans now for a couple of days and are getting it done over there. So it's kind of nice all the way around, even with the, you know, division rivalry, that they're able to help out and kind of house those guys for a little bit. So, Spencer Rattler, to me, has a ton of upside. I know that a lot of people thought that he might have been a higher draft pick than he was. Really turned it on down a stretch run at South Carolina and was obviously a very, very, very big recruit when he came to Oklahoma a number of years ago. And, yeah, you know, there was TV shows and everything else going on with him.
Yeah, you remember that?
Yeah, I think he's...
He's grown up.
He's immensely talented, right? And I think the fact that he's getting the nod tells me how much he's probably grown up since those days. It's interesting.
It's a little bit... that part is surprising for a team that is on a three-game losing skid and needs to get a win, but it just shows you how the confidence they have in him. The funny thing for me is I remember after his freshman year at Oklahoma, and there was Tank for Rattler talk in this station.
I do remember that.
With hosts from this station, with fans from this fan base. We're like, we should tank for Spencer Rattler. And then he hits a bump. I think Kyler Murray came in and played for him, or was it Caleb Williams?
I think it was Caleb Williams.
Caleb Williams, that's who it was. I'm sorry, yeah. Caleb Williams comes in, takes over. Then he transfers when Lincoln Riley leaves, and Spencer transfers. And everything just changed. And then he had a really good year last year at South Carolina. But because it happened at South Carolina, it kind of goes under the radar. And because he fell off a cliff at Oklahoma, he drops. And he, like you said, he's immensely talented. Not a lot of good things came out of that quarterback show for him, though.
No, it didn't. Kind of a bad look. And I know that he had a couple of moments when he was a freshman in Oklahoma as well and everything else. But I'm happy for him. I hope he doesn't play well this weekend or in the near future. And no offense to him.
Hey, let me ask you that though, real quick.
November 10th, they see the Falcons.
Yeah.
Would you rather Tampa win that game and drop to 3-3 and both of those be 3-3 and hopefully the Falcons go to 4-2? Or would you rather Tampa win, knock the Saints down to 2-4, and then that be the race?
I want Tampa to lose.
I do too.
I think they're a better team.
See, I do too.
Yeah.
But it's just like pulling for the Mets over the Phillies.
Yeah. Whisper, I do too. But
like it's so hard to do.
Business is serious.
I hope there's a power outage
so
in that
hard.
Game.
Yeah, can both
this
teams get disqualified?
This is on par with your soliloquy when you do the Beau Whisper.
Yeah. Let me ask you something. No, I'm with you, man. I just think I think that you look at what they could be without Derek Carr, and I don't know what it is. And the fact that you're starting a rookie that was your, really, let's be honest, probably your third option a few weeks ago before Taysom Hill got hurt. And Jake Haener was your backup. That's interesting to see. So I would love it more if Tampa Bay lost, because I think Baker Mayfield, those wide receivers, that offense can do things a little bit better at this point than New Orleans is. I think they're more of a threat to Atlanta at the top of the division right now.
Well, the big news that shook up the NFL world this week was the Jets and owner Woody Johnson deciding to fire coach Robert Saleh after four seasons there. And we were discussing this in great length yesterday, how the owner, again, Woody Johnson, said that he did have a talk with Aaron Rodgers the night before this decision came to fire Saleh. He did say that Rodgers did not have any influence on his decision to do that. And finally, Aaron Rodgers, talking on the Pat McAfee show, he addressed all of that talk.
As far as any of the ridiculous allegations out there, I'm not going to spend more than one sentence in response to it, and that is that I resent any of those accusations because they're patently false. And it's interesting the amount of power that people think that I have, which I don't. But I love Robert, and it was one of those days yesterday.
Did you hear that, Bo? I think he was talking to you.
He was talking to you.
And I've kind of, it's not, we can't take him completely at his word, but I kind of side with him that I don't know that he has that much power when it comes to Woody Johnson. It's not like he's the long-term future. I also think Woody Johnson's a little off base when he's like, they'll get the firing coach bump and we'll play a lot better because there will be an urgency in the locker room. I'm like, I don't know about all that.
Well,
he didn't get rid of what I think was probably the main problem.
Which was Nathaniel Hackett.
This is Nathaniel Hackett.
Well, I personally believe everything Aaron Rodgers says, and I appreciate his candor there. And I think he's 100% accurate. I will say this, and Rich Cimini, I believe that's how you pronounce it, from ESPN.com, says
covers the Jets.
He talked to Tyler Conklin, the tight end for the Jets, one of the tight ends. He says, I don't think anybody inside this building, player-wise or anything, thought that Rodgers had anything to do with that. I honestly, truly believe that, Aaron probably took this harder than almost anybody. Now, that part I don't necessarily know if I believe. The last part about Aaron took it harder than anybody. But according to the players that are in the meetings room with Rodgers, and if you don't believe Aaron, you listen to the other guys in that room, they don't think Aaron Rodgers had anything to do with this. And I think they might know because they are in those trenches. And it's like Randy said the other day, and I know you can talk about this too. Players know.
Yeah.
Players, we don't give players enough credit for what they say, thinking they're always toeing the company line. But maybe we should listen to them sometimes.
I want to approach this from a different angle real quick with you guys, because I think this is something important to kind of talk about. We just talked about the fact that Spencer Rattler is starting for the Saints this week. And now we're talking about the Jets and their quarterback situation and firing Robert Saleh. You know who the loser is in all this?
Devontae Adams.
Right? Because when you look at – so the Raiders reportedly want a second rounder and whoever trades for him to take his salary off the books. And I looked up his salary earlier. They're on the hook for $17 million this year, but then that bumps over the next 2 years to $35 million. Both seasons. So it doubles over the next 2 years. All of a sudden, he doesn't have a landing spot. The Raiders don't really have a trade partner. I think they're hoping that Woody Johnson's like, yeah, let's do it. I don't see how you make the second rounder and the salary cap hit work moving forward for either one of those teams. So it's interesting to look at.
Is that why you think Antonio Pierce said some of the stuff he said yesterday with...
That's what I was just going to get to. So he did announce that Gardner Minshew, he's been benched, so they're going with Aiden O'Connell as their starting quarterback when they face the Steelers on Sunday. And he was also asked if Devontae Adams is still a part of the Raiders.
He's still a Raider. He's never not been a Raider. If when he's healthy and he can play, we'll play him. He's just not healthy right now. And he's getting closer, though. That's the good part. He's working every day to get that hamstrings right. He's in the right headspace.
Yeah. Oh, wait. You're not liking Instagram posts too much? It's crazy. It's crazy how.
He's a Raider. Yeah.
Derek.
Sure is.
Derek Carr goes down. Robert Saleh gets fired. All of a sudden, yeah, man, he's working through it. He's rehabbing. We hope to get him back. As soon as he's ready, he'll play for the Raiders.
He's never not been a Raider.
Quarterback change. They have a quarterback change there now. So.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. The difference in Aiden O'Connell and Gardner Minshew.
I know. But.
I mean. I don't remember there ever being this many, like, this much quarterback controversy in week five of a season. Maybe it's recency bias.
Week five.
But I just, like, you get to week five, and we're talking about quarterbacks for, I feel like, five different teams where it's like, is that the long-term guy?
Well, last year with all the bad, but a little bit different scenario, but ton of injuries, right?
Correct, so, right. But, I mean, just straight-up controversies right now, yes, where it's like, Carolina and Vegas, and, I mean, everybody's talking about Cleveland, and can they make a change, and what's the future for Anthony Richardson, and, like, now you go all the way around the league, and you're like, man.
Well,
like,
Cleveland, the Cleveland one is not like the others to me, but sure, it's because we don't allow guys to go through rough patches anymore in any position. Mike, if Kirk Cousins doesn't throw for 500 yards Thursday night, let's say he throws for 220 and the Falcons lose by 10 points.
Why are you speaking that in existence?
This was last week. If he doesn't throw for 500 last week,
right, last
the Falcons
week, okay,
would have lost,
sure,
by 10 points.
All right.
He throws for 220, two touchdowns, two picks. This city's talking about Michael Penix probably. We're 2-3.
I'm not ready to go there.
No,
I'm not ready to put that. I know what you're saying.
I'm not. That's not the point. But that is what would be happening right now.
I'm not ready to talk about our fans like that.
I
think that's way further down the road. But the good thing is we're not. But I agree with you. You go to 2-3 and you're in third place, and you.
But that's the point. What I'm trying to say is we do, and it starts. It's look, fans don't run with narratives that you don't allow them to, and a lot of times they get it from us. They get a lot of narratives come, and I'm not saying you and me because we get the right ones, but I'm saying people that have microphones, people that have pen and pads, when you overreact behind a microphone or behind a keyboard as a writer or a radio host or whatever, TV host, whatever, that stuff starts to grow and people think it has credence when you're just throwing crap on the wall.
Yeah.
This hour brought to you by Zero Res, smart, lasting, clean. What
I
you
use
got from
one of
Mike
your words. You're not wrong. You're not wrong.
That means I'm right, and I appreciate that.
No, well, you could say that to me every now and then. All right, we got mic'd up coming up. It's a two-parter. First of all, my wife bought me something that I thought was going to test my gangster. Ended up kind of being a good thing. I'm actually happy about it. And on the other side, there was a head coach in college football, maybe at South Carolina, whose gangster was tested as well the last couple of days. We'll talk about Shane Beamer and the fallout from NIL and the transfer portal that continues to roll on. It's mic'd up coming up on the morning shift, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Yeah, you know what time it is. Shout out to my guy John Foy and Associates for bringing you mic'd up today. We've got a couple of things to talk about.
Let me
about.
Tell you something.
Tell me about it.
Your takes this morning, you're going to need the strong arm.
Is that what it is?
Because you guys
Well,
have
you're
going
to need Morgan & Morgan, that's for sure. look, I've got a couple of things to talk about. I just asked y'all coming back on the air. Has anybody ever bought y'all something practical that you thought was a kind of a gift, and then you realized it was kind of for them? That's happened yesterday. You guys kind of thinking about it. You can continue to think on it if you want to. If anything pops up, let me know. All right. So I'm at home yesterday. My wife gets home. She picked the kids up, hands me a package. It's the nose things, the nose bands. What do you call those?
Breathe Right strips.
She buys me a pack of Breathe Right strips, and I'm like, is this for me or is this for you? She's like, I just figured it'd help you sleep better. You know what I mean? And then I realize it's because I've been snoring so bad and she's been elbowing me and waking me up in the middle of the night that she is number one, she left the room a couple of nights ago, and then she also turned herself upside down so her head wasn't near my head. She'd finally had enough.
That's, yeah.
Yeah, she finally had enough. So she buys me Breathe Right strips. And I listen, I got to be honest with you guys, though. I was a little bit upset about it. Thought she was kind of testing my gangster a little bit.
You're upset?
Yeah, I was a little bit upset.
No one wants to be told they snore.
Yeah,
his feelings I took got it personal. Hurt, Tiff.
Yeah, right. No doubt.
His little feelings got hurt.
Well, I'm an emotional person.
You're very sensitive.
As you guys know.
Yes.
So she bribes me to breathe rights. I strap one on last night. I got to be honest. I slept as well as I've slept in a long time. A long time. And I woke up and I was like, man. Woo! Like the birds are chirping. It feels good outside. It's fall weather. I was like, man, I am in a good mood. So, listen, if anybody out there is on the fence or their wife wants to wear breathe rights, man, just take it in stride because it was well worth my time.
I was wondering if she was going to get you because the latest craze is mouth tape. And people have been, have you not seen this?
No.
Oh, you can tape somebody's mouth shut?
You tape your own mouth.
Did Amy try to do that to him?
Like a strip of tape goes over it, like it's lengthwise, but it goes over your mouth, not like in its entirety. So it forces you, I think, to breathe out of your nose. But apparently mouth breathing, like you'll sleep better if you tape your mouth shut.
Really?
With not like, and I'm not telling people to tape your mouth shut. It's like a little strip. It's like a breathe right strip for your mouth.
It's just a reminder not to open
your
mouth.
But people are doing it, and I know some people doing it.
I have not checked with her, but I just got to tell you, I slept hard last night. I hope she did, too. I'll check with her in just a minute. All right, I want to move on to the Shane Beamer stuff because I talked about my gangster getting kind of tested last night. Anybody that has followed the situation going on at South Carolina, they did not play very well last week against Ole Miss. They were held. They didn't score a touchdown. Strictly field goals, Ole Miss with a decisive victory over a team. You go back to their LSU game, all right, they were playing pretty well. Lenora Sellers ended up getting injured in that game. They've had some rough patches since. They will square off with Bama at noon in Tuscaloosa coming up this weekend. A question was asked about a linebacker yesterday for South Carolina that may not be a part of the team, and here is what Shane Beamer used to explain that.
He came in my office yesterday and told me that he was redshirting. I told him that that's not quite how this works, that we can have a discussion about his role and his redshirting best. We went back and forth a little bit. I think his situation's a little bit different than somebody. There's guys on our team right now, Hale, that we've had conversations with that, look, we're doing what we have to do in 2024 to win football games, but if we can save your redshirt year and not play you in five games, we will. Freshmen that have played some, older guys that have started that have played some this year that we've had those conversations with that maybe don't have the role on offense, defense that they want. But, you know, he was a guy that played season high in snaps on Saturday at linebacker that was going to continue to play more for us moving forward. My job is to do what's best for the team. And what was best for the team in my mind is Golly continuing to play and help us go beat Alabama or try to beat Alabama this weekend. And he didn't quite feel the same way. So in the end, I made the decision for him, and it's probably best to move on.
Probably best to move on.
I'm so confused. I'm coming off the most playing time I've ever had in college football as a college football player.
Right.
And I don't want to play.
Yeah. It was cool. Thank you for the boost in playing time, but it just wasn't good enough. Here's how I feel, and I want you guys to weigh in.
Did he think he made it? Oh, I've made it. I'm going to go transfer and make some money.
I think it's the opposite. I think he was like, man, if this is the most I'm going to play here, this is my last chance to make some money, and I better go somewhere else. Here's how I feel about this. There's been a lot of talk recently because of everything at UNLV. Do the red shirt rules need to be changed one way or another? Do you need to do away with red shirt? Does it need to be 5 years? Like, after looking at this situation, I think we're seeing the end of senior backups, right? I think we're seeing the end of upperclassmen that are willing to be backups.
Yeah.
Because it's the last opportunity that a guy like that is going to have to make a little money off of football, right? Because you're like, man, I don't know. I'm not projected to the NFL. Like, what am I doing? Why am I wasting my time? I don't necessarily blame him. I hate it. I hate the situation that both of these guys were put in. But when you're doing what's best for you and doing what's best for the program and you personally and your family, whatever, that's a lot of difficult decisions to make. Here's my proposal. If you don't take the red shirt in your first 2 years in college, you don't have a red shirt option anymore. Right, I think that's the way that this has got to kind of steer.
Unless medical.
Absolutely. Yeah. But I think that when you look at it, you're going to have these situations, and I don't know that there's a senior out there that won't have this thought process where you get to your senior year and you're a backup, and you're thinking, okay, I'm not projected to make NFL money. I'm not making much money here. My playing time is not going up. I'm not starting. Do I really want to let this kind of, you know, this opportunity get flushed? I don't blame him for making that decision. I obviously hate the way he went about it, specifically this time of year, and I don't hate the way Shane Beamer handled it either.
But you think you're going to
hit the trail?
Go get paid? Like, you're not getting that much time there, or you did come off the most minutes you've ever had.
Right.
I'm just confused at how you think you're going to go make someone's going to pay you at maybe what, a smaller program?
I think that like, let's just, I don't know, James Madison, right? If James Madison is looking at a South Carolina linebacker that, you know, played meaningful
snaps,
they'll
find the money.
Right. They're like, dude, this guy could be a marquee player for us. You know what I mean? If he has the, you know, the physical tools and everything going else for it. So I think there are programs that if you're a backup at an SEC school or an ACC school or Big Ten school, there are programs that are non-Power 5 that are looking at you and going, you could be really a cornerstone piece. If we really need an upgrade at linebacker, maybe this is the place to go. I just don't blame him so much for exploring his options, but obviously I don't like the way all this came about. It sucks all the way around. I don't know that there's an easy answer to it, but I also kind of like the way Shane Beamer went about it. He's like, look, man, I'll handle this decision for you.
Maybe go ahead and hit the portal. Maybe it's not the place for you.
Well, I'm not sure how this played out, but according to Shane Beamer, he just walked in and said, yeah, I'm redshirting. That's the first problem.
That's like I said, I don't like the way he went about it, but it is what it is.
I think we need to remember that as great as the NIL is for players and how it's empowered them in some ways, the players with power are the ones that are very, very good. And the ones that are making very good NIL.
The Diego Pavias.
If you walk in there as a backup, a career backup linebacker and be like, this is what's going to happen, you're going to get treated like a career backup linebacker. And get told, no, this isn't. You don't call shots around here. You're not the star quarterback. You're not the star running back. You know, you're not this. You're not that guy.
But in the end, I think he's cool with it.
But like, I think he is too. Well, you know why?
Red shirt, bye.
You know why? He got what he wanted.
Exactly.
So everybody
still
wins.
Got a year left.
I'm curious to know Rusty Manziel's thoughts on all this. He's got us covered when it comes to college sports, also high school football here in this region. So we will talk with Rusty when we come back here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We're in our 8 o'clock hour, and it is brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com to get a guaranteed offer in your home today and start packing. We have our very own esteemed colleague here, Rusty Manziel, joining us in studio.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
So it's going to be a fresh 21. You get your first wine cooler tonight.
You know,
congratulations. You're going to like it. Go from Seagram's. Go for Seagram's. You're going to like it. Go lightweight. Yeah, go lightweight tonight. Not too hard.
I used to get the strawberry daiquiri one I think they had.
Man, a little four-pack.
That takes me back.
Dude,
that
four-pack.
I think Tiff was listening. She was begging the Delta people, maybe upgrade her. Begging's not a good word. But she was lobbying.
I know. Look, I can't get into the travel logistics of what happened for this trip, but on the way there,
Delta.
You know, I need to.
First class and Seagram's. Let's get this girl taken care of.
Birthday seat.
Birthday seat, please.
Rusty, I want to dive right in real quick into Kirby Smart's comments about the crowd. Mm-hmm. I know that a lot of Georgia fans have been talking about that. I know this is a conversation that Nick Saban had after I left Alabama.
Student section.
About the student section, and we need you guys to be a part of this moving forward. And I know that there were times that it seemed like there wasn't anything exciting happening. I know it was hot last weekend. Kind of been, what a lot of Georgia fans are saying and what's Kirby Smart's response to
I was kind of surprised at the, I would say, social media reaction. I heard Kirby interview yesterday. He said, I really don't know, because I kept getting questions, but he doesn't follow social media, you know, doesn't kind of know the pulse of that.
Smart.
Two things I'll say with that, on a fan side, it was hot as hell Saturday.
Yeah.
Like, if you sit on that other side of the stadium, you're getting smoked.
You're getting roasted,
I mean, you're getting smoked. Mm. And, you know, you're a team that you're 20-point favorite. Even though it was crazy to sound, the Georgia-Auburn, it was kind of lackluster going into it, not expecting a bunch. You know, the game kind of just wasn't a ton of explosive plays. I can see where people were like, man, it's smoking hot. I'm going to sit in my seat, and I'm going to get out of here. But I understand Kirby's side of it, because Kirby just said in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, in one of the most electric atmospheres in all of college football, and he's finally getting to come home after 3 weeks, and he's hoping he walks into a crazy environment. Right. He understands the pulse of Georgia-Auburn. It's a big game, and it took off from there. I don't expect it to be an issue. I think the Mississippi State game is going to be an afternoon. It'll be a little cooler second half. They're going to get to light the stadium up in the fourth quarter for the first time.
Mm.
You think about this. You get through this game, your next home game will be Tennessee. Then you get Georgia Tech on a Friday night for the first time, I think, ever. So Tennessee will be a night game. They hadn't announced it yet. Be surprised if it's not. Then you get Georgia Tech. So the rest of the year, I think the home games for Georgia, I don't think it's going to be an issue on crowd.
Yeah, I agree.
It's hot, man. I mean, I get
there
it.
No,
it's
honestly,
smoking hot.
It's funny because on the flip side, South Carolina, Bama play at noon, and Bama's coming off a Vanderbilt loss. Geez. I'm like, dude, I'm hoping it cools off for that crowd for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, you'd hope so.
Yep.
You know, I hate Tennessee with every ounce of my being.
I know what you're about to say.
And the one time I go and pick them, they blow it. Can they blow it 2 weeks in a row?
Do you deep down want Florida to beat Tennessee?
Yes. Because
I've heard Florida fans are saying this week they don't.
You know what? That's so
ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. I absolutely despise that thought process. I want to win everything I can.
There you go. Nobody should ever question you again about Florida. Yeah. I'm telling you right now, I read the Florida boards, our own three sites.
Those guys are clowns.
And I'm telling you now, those guys are like, we cannot win this game. I'm dead serious.
You know what worries me? You know what I see, this is what it's so counterproductive because you don't win games like this. The future is DJ Lagway. He might not be there.
That's right.
And whatever you think about Billy Napier, and I've got thoughts.
Yep.
The one thing I'll give him is he has decided, I know that this is Graham Mertz's team because of the players that told me that.
Yep.
But I'm going to let DJ get his, and getting his, and man, he's making throws.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any chance in holy hell that they can go into Knoxville and win this game?
I mean, there's always a chance.
You know, straight,
I was going to say.
There's always a chance that I get to dunk again one more time in my life.
Don't cliche me. Tell me that. Be real with me.
I would be
very surprised if Florida finds a way because of how the matchup is. You get Tennessee off a loss. You know, some of the stuff that was exposed. I think Arkansas, me and Mike were talking off the air, underrated physicality team. Quarterback got hurt late. Kid from North Cobb, Malachi Singleton comes in cold and delivers what he needed to do on a winning drive. I don't know that he should have scored because I know they let him score. You make them run those timeouts. But that's a freshman quarterback just never played. When he walked in the end zone, I went, oh, no, dude, they don't dive down at the one and make them burn their timeouts. But you know, Tennessee got down the field and had a shot. But to answer your question, Bo, I would be really surprised if they beat them in Knoxville at night. That's going to be a rowdy place.
Yeah.
So this story coming out yesterday with Shane Beamer, South Carolina.
I love it.
We were just discussing it during Mic'd Up with Bengali Kamara.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Basically walking into Beamer's office telling him, I want a red shirt. And Beamer saying, hey, we're not on the same page. Go ahead and hit the transfer portal.
Yeah. They weren't on the same page.
No. Clearly not. Clearly not. First of all, with this situation, is that probably you think the right way to handle it? Yeah. Doesn't want to be there? Yeah. Go.
Yeah. Shane Beamer basically said, hey, quit on us. You know, he said, you come in here asking for a red shirt, and you're getting more playing time now. You should be coming in here asking how we can get better to be Alabama for your teammates and your team. The problem with this goes, there's so many layers to this. Yeah. And Mike and I talked about this off the air. There's somebody in this kid's ear, and there's somebody going, if you don't leave, you're going to miss another year where you could get NIL money. Because if you quit now, and he's quit. Okay, he didn't take a red. He quit. Right.
He quit.
There's a different word. I'm taking a red shirt. You quit, I guarantee you, somebody's like, look, if you go somewhere, you're going to get another 12 to 16 months of NIL money, and that's everything that's wrong with college football. You know what I mean? I'm not blaming the kid because I guarantee. Now he is a grown man at this point in life. You know the age he is. He's making a grown man decision. Yes. But there's people in his ear going, you need to walk out of here because. If you don't make the NFL this time next year, you're going to be looking for a job. And you want another job, you'll get another 12, 16 months of getting anywhere from probably, in my opinion, $5,000 to $10,000 a month at his position and his level.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Wow, that's interesting, too. And kind of to bring you into what we were talking about.
And that's basic pay for an SEC starter.
Kind of to bring you into what we were talking about with this whole situation. I was like, you know, I just hate that this is even an option. I mentioned it to you. To me, we need to start taking red shirts off the table for upperclassmen.
Yeah.
Because this is the tip of the iceberg for the amount of times this is going to start happening.
Yeah, college football can't become your profession.
Or I like the idea if they go, hey, if you're close to graduating, if you tell me you're going to get two more semesters and you're going to graduate, give it to them. Give them that year back. graduate.
Yeah, because
gives them some academic incentive.
Well, and that's what I mean, because I see college football can't become your profession. You're like, go make money for the 4 to 5 years you're in school.
Yeah,
that's fine. But I don't, and I know the Miami kid is a different situation because of injury. But I don't need a guy making $500,000 for 10 years because somehow he's figured out how to redshirt for 10. Injury is one thing, and I'm being a little bit ridiculous, but that we just have lost. We've lost what it's supposed to be at that point.
Speaking of injuries, Rusty, we had an intense conversation earlier about how easy the decision is for Steve Sarkisian to just go back to Quinn Ewers.
Very.
You know, or Arch Manning obviously has played pretty well. He's a little bit different dynamic. What do you think of that situation? The storied SEC rivalry that is Texas and Oklahoma going on this weekend.
it just
sounds ridiculous to say, but I'm here for it, I guess. Yeah. Do you think it's a simple decision for Steve Sarkisian to say, Quinn Ewers is our guy throughout the year? I personally, I think he is. I think it's a little bit more difficult than a lot of people are giving it credit for.
They're probably in a private quarterback meeting, in the private offensive meetings going, we can do whatever we want with either one of them.
Right.
Here's where the long-term value is. Steve Sarkisian brought Quinn Ewers home from Ohio State. He's a Texas kid. He's going to be a first-round draft pick. We can win the national championship with him. Arch Manning is wired right. He knows he wants to wait his time. Supposedly, these two are really tight. And you got a locker room that you got to keep in one direction. But here's the thing, Mike, you know this being a locker room. When you go into a game going, we got two guys we can beat Alabama with.
Right.
We got two guys we can beat Georgia with. It don't matter who's out there. Yep. We'll let's roll. And Quinn Ewers has waited his time. He's done his thing. He's proved it. That game at Michigan when he carved them up, that's his team.
I'm curious because you're talking about in these meetings, and now with everything we've been talking about, it kind of comes back to this. Like, it's almost like you look at it and go, Arch is cool with being the backup, and that's what matters the most important right now, because Quinn Ewers hadn't played 4 games this year.
Mm-hmm.
Right, we just talked about guys that are like, "Hey, if you're going to bench me and I'm going to be the backup, that's not this situation. I'm just saying that there is a lot to be said about Arch being comfortable being that role.
I guarantee if that room was mic'd up, I guarantee you if you could get unfiltered Texas offensive staff meeting, they're going, dude, it doesn't matter.
But here's the reality for me: if his last name, if Arch's last name is Mansell or Morgan,
he'd be playing.
Quinn who? But the reality of the situation is there would be no conversation.
Yeah.
Because Quinn Ewers is a freaking Heisman Trophy candidate coming into the season.
That's right.
Or if Quinn Ewers' name was Manning, they'd be like, what are you talking about? Arch Ewers? Who cares about what he did? Quinn's the guy. And that to me is the biggest part that we're losing. There has been uproar and fan and media talk about it only because of his last name. I'm not saying he didn't play well.
Think about this. What if Quinn Ewers wins a Heisman? What if Texas – just say what if Texas goes all the way to the finals, win or lose it, okay? And they get Arch Manning as a starter next year, and Arch Manning gets 1 year for 15 games for Texas, and he has to go because he's going to be the number one pick. Thank you for that reminds me of David Green and DJ Shockley.
Yeah.
Georgia fans got 1 year of DJ Shockley, and it was a different day and age. Couldn't really transfer then. DJ Shockley won the SEC championship in that 1 year. So
played well.
What do you do? I mean, I know Texas fans are like, God, please let Arch Manning stay 2 more years. And he's wired, and he has financial means to do that, but there's a chance it might get 1 full season out of him.
Let me tell you something. We all would, as fans, would love to have that spot what Texas is in.
Dylan's telling me we got to go, but I have to highlight this game, and I want you to give me just 10 seconds. Ole Miss and LSU, underrated game this weekend on the radar, 9-13. That's a game that is usually crazy.
Ole Miss is walking into a 1988 Guns N' Roses concert.
Oh, wow.
100-year celebration and Baton Rouge.
Woo!
There's going to be a lot of Uber rides home. I can assure you that place is going to be unhinged.
It's such a good game. Every year, that's such a good game.
I'm telling you
what. Great analogy.
Huge game.
Rusty, we appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us. We come back here on the morning shift. We'll get to set for Falcons-Panthers this weekend. That's next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We are back, and this hour is brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com to get a guaranteed offer on your home today. And start packing. So since we're just talking about this in the break, the Aaron Hernandez story, I think it's on FX.
Yes.
And so I haven't not watched it, but the clips that have been circulating are insane in terms of making fun of it.
Yes. It's comical because it really does feel like an SNL skit. Like, and it's not like, I mean, FX is, you know, it's kind of known for dramas.
They've got some
and
good
things.
Stuff,
you know,
yeah.
Like, and it's meant to be, it's not meant to be satirical, but it feels that way with the guys they use for Belichick. And then you watch the Gronkowski, you know, scene in the locker room. And then, I don't know if you guys have seen this one, but there's a scene where Aaron Hernandez is like running the 40 and like running routes. And
yes,
like, it's just like, dude, I feel like they could have like hired me or any one of us in like to run better routes than this guy. And it's like, it's just so bad. But it's almost funny to kind of watch, man. But it honestly, I kind of want to watch it just so I can laugh.
I kind of want to watch it now too. Yeah. Like, I had no plans to watch
100%.
It.
100%. Do not
and
care.
Now,
but yeah.
All these clips are making it seem like you might have, in light of a horrible, horrible subject, like you might laugh at the acting and what is going on there.
The guy they use for Bill Belichick is so funnily spot on. It feels like an SNL skit about Bill Belichick. Like you're just
really?
Like, wow.
I saw some clips of him too, like jamming out in his office to,
yes.
I think it was Bon Jovi or whatever.
Yeah.
And you're like, wait, what?
So over the top. Tom Brady walking through the locker room. Hey, let's go. You're like, okay.
All right.
Well, we've replaced these made-for-TV movies. Remember back in the day when we were kids, like any major event that happened, 6 months later, there was a made-for-TV movie that was with D-list actors on like
oh, yeah.
ABC or NBC or whatever, and you would get like 90 minutes of this, you know, reenactment of what happened or whatever. And now they're just doing these docudrama, these, you know, like miniseries things. Mm-hmm. And that's what this one is. And, it, you know, FX did the OJ one. And the OJ one was phenomenal because you had Cuba Gooding Jr. in it and John Travolta and Ross from Friends, David Schwimmer. And, you know, they had just guys that people you knew. I saw the advertisement for this Aaron Hernandez thing. I don't know any of these guys.
Yeah.
And it's literally, you've gone back to just, and it just looks awful. I was talking to my buddy Phil, and he said, have you watched any of it yet? And he goes, yeah. He said, I know that this is going to sound bad. He goes, but we laugh at so much of it. And it's not something we should be laughing at, but it's the acting and the delivery. And you're just like, this can't be real.
Yeah.
Like, this cannot be how they're really doing this.
Yeah. It is funny.
Yeah, it's. I'm gonna have to start watching it now. Maybe I'm back on Sunday. I might do a little binge watching to see what goes on. We have the Falcons and Panthers on Sunday, so I'll be I'll land on a red eye on Sunday morning, so I'll be watching it then. But don't we have football in London?
We should. I'm not sure which game it is. Let me look it up really quick. But yeah,
all
I mean,
did last week
this
was
Jacksonville, Chicago.
Yeah.
There you go.
9:30.
Yeah.
All right. So I will not be watching it this weekend because all I did was sit on the couch last week after I got back and watch football from making breakfast through the entire day.
Yeah. And we honestly, we had a chance to do that too because, Tiff, as you know, we
Thursday
night game, and then me and Bo slept here and I probably snored, according to my wife, on my air mattress.
Yeah, I could hear you from my office.
Is that right? Yeah, right.
Yeah, it kept me awake.
But it was an awesome Sunday to watch football kind of all day long, and I guess the NFL's doing the right thing by putting this thing on at 9:30 because I definitely woke up and turned it on and wanted to see what was going on. So it's cool.
Can we get different play-by-play guy? I don't love the play-by-play
guy. Yeah, I'm not
going to
go down that road.
I don't think
he didn't feel very comfortable.
It wasn't great. I love Kurt Warner, though, in his analysis. I think Kurt Warner is – I don't know why he has not – I know he does stuff for the network and the pregame shows.
NFL Plus. Yeah,
but I just don't know why he never got – I guess because the NFL Network gobbled him up, but why he was not on one of these Fox or CBS crews. I think he's pretty good.
I wonder if it's a time thing for him. Like, I wonder if, like, he's like, I don't want to do one every week. I'll do one, then I'll do some videos. I think a lot of those guys go through that. I think it's the reason, like, you don't see – it's the same reason, like, you don't see, like, a Peyton Manning in the booth. Like, he's just like, dude, I don't know if I want to commit to that.
But he used to do Westwood One because I've talked to him at playoff games before.
Yeah.
And so – for the radio. So I've talked to him, and we were playing – we played the Rams that year in the divisional. It was a wild card game, and well, we talked in the bathroom about something the Falcons needed to do. I can't remember the thing, but we were talking about it. And I was
what's up with your quarterbacks in the bathroom,
I know.
Bro?
Well, I mean, that's the only – it's interaction time. It's halftime.
No, no. No, there's Tiff, I'm starting to notice a weird trend. Like, he talked the one time about kind of stalking Urban Meyer in a bathroom
and
one time.
And who was it? Troy Aikman.
It's just starting to get a little. I'm starting to connect the dots here.
I did have a bathroom encounter with John Lynch right before he took the GM job in San Francisco. We talked about
the whole
Falcons
Chris Broussard thing. Like, this, I don't know.
He was on an interview where he sat on the toilet and did an interview with his show.
Have y'all talked about that on air?
Oh, it's been publicly documented.
Yeah, but you didn't say what.
I didn't say it the other day, but I was producing a show at 790 back in the day. Mike Bell was doing the show, so ask him this afternoon or tweet him and ask him about the time Chris Broussard joined the show. Chris Broussard joins the show, and you know, I had booked him and everything. You hear whoosh,
yeah,
and then you hear the dun, 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 you know, the door open and hit thing, and you're
did he miss a beat? Was his answer just
he just kept talking.
I love it. Shout out to this guy. I love it, man.
It's a bodily function. It's perfectly natural, so you can.
That's cool. We don't know that he's going to the bathroom. Cool, but, might have been throwing away a tissue.
He could have been.
When I called, no, man, he was in there for the entire interview. he might have had
privacy.
Say something.
Man, you got to go when you got to go.
He probably needed some takes of Imodium because something was wrong.
Oh my god!
But all he had to do was call me and text me and be like, "Dude, can we push this back like 10 minutes? I got the runs." And I'd have been like, "Yeah, dude, all good."
Okay.
All right. Next up.
Well, there's no graceful way to pivot. So again, Falcons.
We got
to
stop the run. That's what.
I'm done. Falcons, I'm retiring.
The Falcons got to be the Imodium for the Panthers and Chuba Hubbard's run game. That's what we got to do. We got to have Nate Landman come back and clock that hole like a bottle of Imodium.
All right.
Well, what is Ruka Roro Rose? How will he play a role in that? So let's just hear from him.
I wouldn't say it's no way. You know, I was just I stayed preparing. Those weeks that I was not playing, I was still preparing. So it felt like I played all those games because I took all those mental reps as I was watching the game. So, you know, it was very exciting to go out there, you know, play with my brothers for the first time. A lot of energy, and I can't wait to do it again.
If you stay ready, you don't have to get ready. That's what he was saying. So
that is exactly what he was saying.
I love that, man. I love that. I think that when you look at and Tiff, I don't know if you've been able to see any of this, but there's been a lot of pushback to me on social media when we start the pregame show that none of the Falcons rookies are playing, other than and you got Bertrand. But you look at all the guys you drafted, and Penix obviously was going to be a backup, and then you know you look at the other situations with a lot of these guys, and now Zion Logue is now he's not even on the practice squad anymore. There's been some pushback, like where's Rook? We want to see Rook, and yet, you know, he comes to the forefront last week and is able to get some playing time. You and I talked about it, Bo, in the pregame. I had already noticed it and talked to Chris Goforth about it. I'm like, man, that's an interesting and active list that just popped out, and I do not see Rook or Roro.
But yeah. I guess why do we have to make a push for some of the – like, I know you want to see what some of these higher draft picks can do, but why do you have to make a push for it? Like, can they develop? As he said, he was taking all these mental reps, staying ready.
It's an extension of the quarterback conversation. So, that's all it is.
I think it's two-tier. I think, one, you've been very thin for a number of years at positions that you've needed rookies to step in and take over. But I also think it is the excitement of when you draft a guy and you're told this guy is this and this and this, and that's why – you don't necessarily know how good he's played at college because he's not a brand name like, you know, the guy from Alabama that got drafted in the first round, Dallas Turner, and those types of names. But this guy can be just as good for what we need him to do. And then you don't weeks. And you go, well, I was sold a bill of goods, and now I haven't seen him. So it's just kind of like wanting to see these things. But I think that also shows the growth of this team. We have more depth than we've ever had. It took 4 weeks for him to knock Kentavious Street to the inactive list so he can bump up. I think I think we should see that and be happy about it, not upset.
That's what I'm kind of going for.
Natural reaction is why'd you pick this guy if he's not going to?
I understand what you're saying, but I have to take at least the side of some people that are upset and point out the fact that if there has been one position group we've looked at and wondered, you know, if they're going to play better, it's been the defensive line, right? Yes. So when you draft, what, five guys that play in the front seven and none of them play, Brandon Dorlus is not playing, Rook wasn't playing, Bertrand didn't play till last week, I think it's a fair question that you can ask of, did we address our needs?
I don't think it's
the
all
draft,
but I don't think this rush, and that's fine. Rukurororo, to me, was, you know, I don't think he's all been on against the run game. The defensive line is not all to blame for the run game. I don't think your linebackers have done a good job of filling the gaps and shedding blocks. And I think to say that it was, you know, when you deactivate Kentavious Street and you activate Rukurororo, you're not looking for him to go in there and give you three sacks. You're looking for him to help on the run game. Yeah,
I agree.
And he did. But I just don't think you can blame it all on one position group on what the defensive issues have been with the run game. So I don't necessarily agree with all that.
I'm just looking at it from the standpoint of, like, just let people develop if that's what needs to take place. I guess I think about Vanderbilt a lot with this. Say that it's just because of that win over Alabama.
Just keep
but
poking
you
me, don't
look
you?
At you look at what happens Golly. When a coach is given time, players are given time, it kind of falls under the same umbrella to me. We have a Life of Squid coming up.
Well, that's probably not going to be good.
You know what I mean? Hey, this hour brought to you by Markspan Real Estate. Go to Markspan.com. Get a guaranteed offer on your home today and start packing. You want to make a quick rebuttal real fast?
You know, when you this guy gives you a reason not to listen, I don't know what to tell you. A legend has retired in sports, the sports world. I'll tell you who next. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and
The Odyssey app.
We are back here on the morning show. What does this have to do with me?
This is Gnarls Barkley. I love this song.
I was wondering what it had to. I know, but you said, is this song about you?
Look, this is the way he says, does that make me crazy?
Yeah. I bet you think this song is about you.
What is happening
I don't know.
Here?
I'm just in a good mood. Hopefully everybody else out there is too, man.
Tiffany's in. It's her 40th birthday.
And you got really some good weather going on. Rusty was talking about how it's going to get into the 30s possibly next week.
Oh, I'm excited about next week.
You got really good weather to get on a plane.
Let me see what the temperature is in Reno, Nevada.
Atlantic City, Nevada.
That is, by the way, there's no way that is even remotely true.
What do you mean?
This is what people told me. I've never been.
Reno.
Oh, it's cold there. Well, it's 49 right now, but the high is 83. Realize this.
It gets cold at night and warm at the end of the day.
I know.
You know, it's tricky to pack for.
It really is. I'm not going to do any
you've
shopping
already packed.
Out there. I have not.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
I wanted to. I will throw some stuff in a suitcase. I'll
Too
make
much
it
time,
happen.
All those birthday notifications. Yeah. Not enough time to pack.
Oh, funny, because I hate nothing more than notifications. Mm. You guys leave me alone. All right.
Real quick, I want to give a shout out. My cousin came in town last night. He works through a disaster relief company, and he was leaving Asheville after 9 days in Asheville, North Carolina. Slept at my house last night. He was waking up this morning to pick up a coworker at the airport, and they are headed south to Florida now to work with disaster relief down there. He works for a company that supplies gas for generators and other things going on. So he was kind of giving me some of the stories that were going on in Asheville, and we were kind of watching coverage last night. And hopefully, I know they didn't, but hopefully everybody came out okay after Hurricane Milton. It's a sad scene. Looking at the pictures of Tropicana Field down there, just terrifying.
It's you want to thank everybody that's lending a hand to help everybody that's either been affected by Helene and now Milton. So big thanks to those folks, and also to anyone that's evacuated. If you've come up here, just hopefully you know, it's good that you and your family at least have found a safe place to 100%. Go. Not everybody has that opportunity, but we did actually, when I was at lunch the other day, ran into a couple with their baby and probably like a 5-year-old daughter. And luckily they had family in the area, and so they were able to come up and have a place to stay, but you know, they were in the path of the storm as well.
Did you see Lieutenant Dan? Did you see this guy?
Yeah, I saw that.
There's been a lot of other stories that have come out about him too. There's a lot happening in that situation.
I don't know. I'm sure that
I think he got out though. Is what I saw.
No, he stayed.
No, I saw. I think the last thing I saw was they did get him to leave.
No, he stayed.
It was on TMZ. Your people.
I saw was him like waking up after the initial surge and like kind of opening his door to his sailboat.
Yeah, maybe 5 hours ago.
Maybe I need to get caught up then.
Yeah. So no, the mayor said what you're saying is that the mayor went on and said, yeah, we got him evacuated. And there was a news guy went back, and he's like, no, I'm still here. He comes out, he's like, I'm still here. And he didn't leave. And I don't know. I'm sure that that's who Gnarls Barkley was really singing about. But that, there's probably some stuff going on there. But
yeah, the mayor, that was 20 hours ago.
Yeah,
so yeah.
There was video from like 5 or 6 hours, and somebody goes up to the boat, and the sailboat's just rocking, and all of a sudden you see him, you see his hands come up, and he pokes himself out of there. He stayed through that the initial hit.
That video was
not smart.
And no, it's not smart. No. Please not don't smart. Do something like that. It took the field, it took the roof off Tropicana Field. The roof of that stadium, the baseball stadium where they play the Rays, is it looks the tarp's all torn off. It is completely destroyed.
Me and my
the
cousin
roof.
Talked about that last night. And that, you know, it was like a National Guard staging area.
You
for the preparation.
Yeah.
And I was like, I was talking to my cousin last night. I was like, I just don't think that that's going to survive. It's one of the last remaining indoor stadiums that has that canopy. Top to it, but much in the way you remember Minnesota's when they had the blizzard a few years ago. And like, that's one of the last remaining places like that. And I was like, I just don't know if that's going to survive enough for that to continue to be a staging area after this.
Wow.
And it definitely
looking
did not.
The video now.
Yeah. You can see the beds and stuff down there. So it's been pretty rough, and we're still, you know, thoughts and prayers going down there. Hopefully they get through it and with as little as damage as possible.
Wow.
Yes, yeah, right. W Sauce, New Realm Brewing as well. Met with my guy Chaz yesterday. New Realm Brewing, Owl Inn. Hoo-hoo, that's the name of the beer. It's a official craft beer of Kennesaw State.
Owl Inn.
Owl Inn.
Owl. Okay. I said owl.
I did too.
Owl.
Owl. You know how like he says that. Words
owl
sometimes.
Inn.
Like say oil.
Yeah.
Say
We're
oil.
Owl Inn.
Oil.
Oh, he says, oh.
No, did I ever tell you that story?
No.
When I was doing,
I don't know if we have time
when
right
I was
now.
Doing, well, I don't know. It's my segment. I do whatever I want. It sucks anyways, according to you, so I'll just keep doing it.
You said it, not me.
When I was doing a Georgia Hemp commercial, and I was recording it by myself because it was during COVID, and they were like, hey, all your essential
oils?
And oils, and I go, oils. And I heard it back, and it was like, all your essential oils, and I go, holy hell, that sounds awful. And so I literally had to play the audio of someone phonetically sounding out oils.
It's like you're saying school without the SCH.
Schools. Wait, I'm sorry. Did you say skull?
Ools.
Yeah, skull.
He's
got what?
To go skull.
Did you say skull? No, not Dylan. Not the Vikings. Ool. Like skull bandits. Like the dip. Probably shouldn't advertise.
What is your life a squid, sir?
But anyways, I met with Chaz. The beer is phenomenal. I had a couple yesterday at lunch. I mean, they're absolutely phenomenal. Go get some. You can get them at Total Wine and other places. It is a phenomenal beer.
Not to put you on the spot, but you know what kind? Like, is it an IPA or what we get going on?
Yeah, it's craft lager. It's a craft lager. Is what it's not an IPA. It's a craft lager. It's phenomenal and great. Anyways. A legend is retired. Rafael Nadal is going to retire at the end of the year from tennis. He won like 14 French Opens. He has got, dude, I want to say he's got like, 22 Grand Slam titles.
Yeah, 22.
Unbelievable. But he wasn't the best of that era. I think it goes Djokovic, Federer, Nadal, honestly. Mainly because of how many of his came at one, and I know that all of them had one place where they were better than not.
I was going to say, they all had different styles, different surfaces they were better on. It makes me sad sometimes, man, when we see just absolute legends that are hanging him up, and obviously he deserves to retire and have all the flowers thrown his way, but there's just something, man, I don't know what it is. Like, that's one of the reasons every time Tiger plays, a lot of people are like, man, let's go Tiger, because it just seems like everybody's kind of holding on to that last little bit of that legendary, you know, those scenes that these guys have created.
Because it was through our youth and into our, you know, adulthood
now. Yeah, so. I agree, man. It stinks, but hats off to him, man. What a absolute legend. And, it's created a lot of memories in tennis for a lot of people.
I'm going to pour one out tonight on the golf course for him when I'm eating.
Some of that oil in?
Oil.
Owl.
Oil
in. The official craft lager of KSU Athletics and Squid Nation. You know what? Hey, we got a beer.
Look, I'm trying to get us out.
We got W Sauce. We got to come to the nation. It's just better. They ain't got nothing in the mafia.
It's not.
We'll find out what's coming up on the steakhouse.
Better be nice. It's your birthday.
Stay with us here. That means I can do whatever I want. Stay with us here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.